Now, the last Thursday of the month means it's time to talk style and design with Bianca Reznikoff, who is standing by, as I mentioned, to reflect on a number of different stories this week. Bianca, always great to have you with us. Welcome.
Hi, Pippa. Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Are you hearing me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Touch wood, the technology keeps with us, Bianca.
Yes.
Look, as much as we've been watching the sport at the Olympics, who is wearing what has suddenly become a very big deal. There's been so much going on around team uniforms and leotard lengths and short lengths, etc. Who would have thought that that would be making such a fuss, as well as the actual athletic performance? Before we talk about Team South Africa's appearance at the opening ceremony, Bianca, as a matter of interest, any outfits that stood out for you that you thought were really creative or really stylish or just really great?
I have to be honest, I didn't watch the opening ceremony. I have to admit that, so I can't give an opinion.
Okay.
I mainly was interested in what our team was wearing and looked at that quite closely. But I had been reading the commentary, and most were liked, except for ours, really. I mean, the South African Olympic opening ceremony were trending on social media this past week in a positive and negative way, complete with the Madiba-inspired printed shirts, safari shorts, and veldskoen with South African flag-printed socks. They were designed as a collaboration between four young Durban-based designers who were graduates chosen from the Durban Fashion Fair, and they collaborated with Mr. Price Sport. I mean, you know, opening ceremony kits are a bit like red carpet events, and fashion commentators will always have varied opinions. Some felt that the outfit looked like the love child of the ANC and the Freedom Front. That was one comment that came up. Others loved the inclusion of the South African veldskoen, saying that it was fun, you know, and that the zebra print shirts were very Madiba-esque. So,
yeah.
My opinion, I for one liked elements of the outfit, but I think that too many cooks might have spoiled the broth here in this case. You know, four designers working together might have been where the problem came in. Too many concepts and visions needing to be realized in one outfit can be problematic.
You know, I agree with you there, because to me, this was almost more of a PR fail than a fashion fail, because having listened after the event to one of the designers speaking on the show earlier this week and explaining the thought process and the design process and talking about the inspiration, I kind of got it then. And I thought, yes, I like that. I like this aspect. I like the fact that they decided to go with a big five sort of animal inspired thing rather than any kind of tribal garb or influence, for example, because they felt it would be the most inclusive way of doing it. The sort of story behind it was actually really interesting. And to me, they should have put that out as the team walked into the stadium or immediately afterwards to sort of talk people through what you're looking at. They might have got a slightly kinder reception, I think, had they done that. Mr. Price, the partner, Bianca.
Yeah, one also has to bear in mind the climate in Tokyo at the moment. You know, it's summer, temperatures reach 30 degrees at night, it rains. You know, the athletes need to be comfortable, which is, I think, where the safari shorts the mix. But aside from that, the Mr. Price has also designed their activewear kit, as well as their medal-winning tracksuits and Olympic Village casual wear. So it's not just the opening ceremony that had to be, you know, thought of. There were many aspects to their gear and their kit. And I spoke to head of marketing at Mr. Price Sport, Dylan Cherry, earlier to get some feedback from Mr. Price. And this is what, I don't know if you've got that clip ready.
I think we do.
This is what he had to say.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we have to acknowledge that the athletes are the ones who wear the kit and win the medals, and we wanted them to feel comfortable in the kit and also to be able to feel proud of their nation and to perform at the highest level and just know that they'll be recognized as South Africa's best. We have already had some feedback, actually, from the athletes and the SASCOC team management, just to let us know that, you know, the athletes feel proud to be in the kit, and they feel that with the kit they've received this year, that they're on par with any of the other teams wearing international brands and so on. So that's really, if we had to say what was one of our, what one of our objectives were in terms of being part of this whole, sponsorship partnership, which runs over 4 years up to Paris 2024, was that, you know, in previous years, they had not had other teams asking them to swap their kit. And, you know, I think that's part of the Olympic experience, is that you would, you know, swap kit with your fellow athletes to, as a memorabilia, and to say, you know, this was the South African kit, or you trade kits with an American or another African country. It's, I think that's part of the experience. And already they've had requests for the kit and to trade shirts and trade items that they've been seen wearing in the Olympic arena and in the Olympic Village. So I think that was one of our goals. And I think based on the feedback we've received, we've achieved that. And so now we have our athletes in a desirable kit.
That's a very interesting perspective to hear, Bianca. I wasn't aware of that aspect of swapping kit like that. That's quite cute. Look, it's certainly memorable. And I will say, I have seen some positive international commentary. I noticed Forbes magazine's fashion commentator, Stephen Rabimov, had a very interesting comment. He picked up on the fact that this was locally designed, locally manufactured gear. And his comment on their sort of fashion review was, it's the first time the entire kit has been created and produced locally. It may not be memorable as a fashion statement, but it is a commendable experiment in divesting from corporations to the people. Given recent unrest in the country, this may provide a rare instance of unity. So somebody got it internationally. That's nice to know. Yeah. The million-dollar phrase in that clip is, until Paris 2024. Bianca, nobody wants to be fashion-shamed in Paris in 2024. I hope they're planning in advance.
Me too.
Okay, I'd love to hear from the audience what you thought of the gear. For me also, and who else you liked, Team USA in their Ralph Lauren always looks super chic, and they did it again this year. I liked the Greek athletes. They were in a very sort of casual, cool look. The women had pleated skirts with a sort of swish of blue across them. The men in suits and sneakers, I thought they looked very cool, and particularly given how hot it's been in Tokyo, I liked that one. There was a very interesting Liberian design as well from a New York designer who is of Liberian heritage, which was a standout for me. So, but I'd love to hear from our listeners which teams you thought stood out for good or bad reasons.
But also,
ceremony.
But also about the tracksuits and the other kit that Mr. Price has sponsored, because I think that they look pretty smart with that Protea emblem, you know, on their track gear. You know, maybe the opening ceremony outfit was a little bit of a miss, but the other kit has been pretty beautiful and kind of stood its own.
Okay, let's hear some listener feedback on that. I must say, I'm trying to picture it, Bianca, and all I can see of our athletes are them in the pool on the surfboard. I haven't actually had a good look at the rest of the outfits, so I must make a point of doing that today. Before we leave Tokyo, let's go to Japan right here in Cape Town. Bianca, you want to tip us off about a very different kind of experience that we can have of Japanese confectionery and style.
Yeah, so staying with the Olympic theme, if you're looking for some authentic Japanese snacks to dig into while you binge watch the Olympics, Japanese restaurant Ching Ching in Long Market Street in the Cape Town CBD has opened up a pop-up mochi mochi confectionery shop where you can get a box of authentic Japanese desserts to accompany your coffee. So a mochi is a rice flour truffle infused with a delicious chewy center. Traditionally, it's flavored with green tea powder, otherwise known as matcha, but mochi mochi has also infused some South African flavors into their truffles, like milk tart, which I can vouch for because I tasted it yesterday. I also tried the black sesame seed, cookie dough, and the Turkish delight mochi, all delicious and beautifully packaged in a little box with Japanese stickers. I popped past their store in Long Market Street. It's in the block between Loop and Long, you know, because Long Market Street's quite a long street. So just between Loop and Long to sample their mochi. And I spoke to their super friendly and knowledgeable front of house, Michaela, and here's what she had to say.
Hi there, this is Michaela, the front of house of Mochi Mochi speaking, South Africa's only Japanese-inspired mochi palace. Mochi Mochi was started by chefs Audrey and Christy from Ching Ching restaurant and bar next door to us. It was their little mind baby as they went to Japan to get inspiration for more Japanese treats and cafe eats. We provide a variety of little Japanese snacks, ranging from our most popular mochi truffles to mochi ice cream, a more westernized take on the mochi dessert, to little savory eats such as our famous atsuri dogs and a curry pan. Our mochi are very, very popular amongst South Africans, and we thank you so much for all the support. We try our best to stay as authentic to Japanese culture as we can whilst blending in a nice mix of South African flavors and ranges and experiences. Our most popular mochi travel flavors, which are priced individually at 15 rand each, are Molten Toffee Coffee, which is a company that we have blended with in order to create mochi mochi, and matcha, one of the more traditional flavors we have infused with white chocolate. Please come down and support mochi mochi, everybody. Thank you so much.
I can also highly recommend their mini Japanese cheesecake with miso caramel sauce, which I will be returning for, and also their steamed bun with Japanese crusted chicken. And something else that was delicious was seaweed flaked hot chips, which you can also take away.
Wow. So savory as well as sweet. Sounds like there are a lot of good reasons to go and visit them. Okay, they're open Tuesday to Saturday from 8 to 5, by the way, and that is Mochi Mochi on Long Market Street in the block between Loop and Long. Before we move on to celebrity weddings, Bianca, a couple of people commenting on the Olympic wear. One good, one bad, and one I'm not quite sure because it's a voice note. Let's start with the good. Debbie in Rondebosch loved the South African outfits. She says the white tracksuits for the medal ceremonies in particular are so stylish. Yeah. Bianca, a zebra print on her back, and Tatiana, a protea on hers. And Debbie really loved that. So that's Bianca Batendach, of course. You're right. That I can picture. The look at the medal ceremonies, as few and far between as they have been, has been a good one. And then somebody else saying the South African Olympic wear was a little disappointing and old-fashioned. I agree with the idea that we could have really made it a bit more African chic. This person also loved the Greeks. Okay, so somebody agreeing with me on that one. I'd love to hear some more listener feedback on the different countries' outfits. We've also got a voice note responding to the sound clip from Mr. Price, I think. Let's take a listen.
Bianca, do you think Mr. Price and all the other designers will be making this kit available? Can we buy it in the shops? Because I think it's really cool.
Any idea, Bianca?
I'll follow up on that one and I'll get back to you.
Okay. Would you like to, or that person obviously would like to wear one. I'm not sure which bit of it they think would be a good addition to the wardrobe. Maybe somebody else would like to comment on which bits they would like. We didn't mention the shoes, Bianca. Look, I'm not a big Felskun fan. I don't think they are the most stylish look overall, but for a Felskun, that was a very good one. And I loved the socks.
Yeah, is that a comment too? Mr. Price also had to supply them with trainers and slides for the Olympic Village. So I think they've really done a pretty good job kitting them out. But yeah, I don't know about the Felskun. Apparently, some people find them exceptionally comfortable.
Some of our colleagues have said that as well. It's to me, that's like, it's the same argument that is made for Crocs. It's not enough to make me want to buy a pair, but I'm very happy for others who prefer to wear them to do so with pride. Okay, Bianca, before we run out of time, there was a celebrity wedding within the last couple of days that had some very strong South African connections that you want to talk about.
Yeah, so strong South African connections, and also a fashion fairy tale that's worth checking out just for the eye candy. It's been all over the British tabloids this week. You'll see the late Lady Diana's niece, Lady Kitty Spencer, married South African-born businessman Michael Lewis over the weekend. It was a lavish wedding in a castle in Rome. And the couple's wedding was reportedly postponed a few times due to lockdown restrictions. Lady Kitty has lived most of her life in Cape Town, really. She went to Redham House School. She went to UCT. And the groom, Michael Lewis, is chairman of the Fashini Group and has very strong ties with South Africa and Cape Town in particular. The bride was dressed by Dolce & Gabbana. She is their spokesmodel and their muse. So you can imagine how she looked. She wore five different dresses. Spectacular fairy tale dresses over the whole weekend to all the functions that occurred and the celebrations. You can check them out on Instagram, or you can Google Lady Kitty Spencer. For anyone who's interested in fashion, it really is worth checking out.
Sorry if I can interrupt. I've only seen one of them, and that's the photograph of the very sort of Victorian style, very covered up, but at the same time quite sort of see-through in places. Very sort of iconic look for her.
I thought that her dress is one of the most beautiful royal wedding dresses that I've ever seen. As you said, a Victorian-inspired lace with a high neck, a puffed sleeve, and that floor-length veil, really quite exquisite, with just her hair pulled back, simply pure perfection, in my opinion. I think we'll be seeing many brides emulating this look going forward when we're finally allowed to attend weddings safely again.
Okay. One has to comment on what wasn't part of the bridal retinue. She didn't wear the Spencer tiara. How did she accessorize? A lot of people making a fuss of the fact that she didn't wear the family jewels that had been worn by Lady Di and others before her. How did she accessorize, Bianca?
She wore very little in terms of accessories with her dress. The dress was the star of the show, and the bride herself. She wore tiny earrings and things, and the puffed sleeves were the main attraction of the dress, and the high neck, the corseting that you said, as you said, was see-through on the bodice of the dress, and the veil. I mean, her mother, Victoria Aitken, wore Diana's tiara to her wedding, but there was no tiara worn by Lady Kitty Spencer. She also is the brand ambassador for Bulgari Jewelry, and so through the weekend, she wore quite extensive kind of jewelry, big necklaces and huge earrings, also with her hair back. So if you Google it, or go onto her Instagram and just hashtag Lady Kitty Spencer, you can check it all out. For us ordinary folk, it's quite a visual treat to take our minds off our daily life.
Thank you for that. We need all of those that we can get at the moment. Final bit of good news to share about a South African architect receiving some international recognition.
Yes, I interviewed South African architect Samaya Valley when I stood in for you recently to discuss her being the youngest architect and the first South African invited to design the Serpentine Pavilion for 2020 and 2021 in Kensington Gardens. And I just wanted to mention that she was also listed on the Time 100 Next list for 2021, a list that features future leaders and innovators, which is a huge honor for her and for us as a country.
Thanks for letting us know about that, Bianca. And thanks, as always, for being with us to keep us abreast of the latest style and design news. Great to have you on the show, as always.